throughout the entire area. An upper-level disturbance will approach from the northern plains this evening, and that'll spread light snow across the region tonight and into tomorrow. Snow accumulations of 1 to 3 inches will occur along a line stretching from Des Moines to Springfield to Louisville, with isolated higher amounts of 3 to 5 inches across parts of Iowa. The system will push to the east out of the Midwest on Christmas Day, but some snow flurries will linger and be possible for much of the day on Saturday. So we do stand the risk of some snowfall through Christmas Eve day and into Christmas Eve night and Christmas morning. So as I mentioned yesterday, atmospheric snow, yes, if you're sticking at home, if you're doing some traveling, you'll want to watch out for it. Mostly sunny for the rest of the afternoon. Light north winds and a high of 30 degrees this afternoon. For tonight, cloudy, the low 25, light east winds. For tomorrow, the chance of snow develops in the morning. Snow will be likely by afternoon with accumulations of 1 to 2 inches in the Champaign-Urbana area. The high of around 32 with light northeast winds. Snow is likely to continue through Friday night. Another chance of snow after midnight into Christmas Day. Light accumulation possible. Christmas Eve's low 22. The Christmas Day forecast itself mostly cloudy with a chance of snow in the morning and then scattered flurries in the afternoon. Near steady temperatures in the mid-20s on Saturday. North winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Mostly cloudy Saturday night and into Sunday with more scattered lingering flurries. Saturday night low 16, Sunday's high 26. And looking into next week, we'll see clouds for Sunday night and Monday. Partly cloudy Monday night all the way through Wednesday. Highs in the low 20s Monday, mid-20s Tuesday, Wednesday getting to around 30. Sunday night lows in the low teens, Monday night around 10, and the Tuesday night low around 15 degrees. Around the region, temperatures in the mid-20s and some low to mid-30s. It's as warm as 35 in Springfield, 34 in Mattoon and Decatur and Peoria, 23 degrees in Pontiac, 24 in Danville. Rantoul has 27 degrees. Mostly sunny all around, by the way. 28 in Bloomington. And at Willard Airport at the top of the hour, it was 31 degrees with a light wind out of the north at 3 miles an hour. The dew point at 23. The relative humidity, 72%. And the barometer falling at 30.46. Right now on Friends Plaza, 29 degrees and bright sunshine. It's 12:39. It's the Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is away. I'm Tom Rogers. Type 2 diabetes, the kind related to obesity and an unhealthy diet, gets a lot of attention these days. But there's another less common form of diabetes, type 1, that can also lead to life-threatening complications. Illinois Public Radio's Veronique LaCapra takes us behind the scenes at a hospital in St. Louis for the transplant operation that got one woman off dialysis and made her diabetes-free.
It's 5:30 a.m. in an operating room at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis. Surgeon Jason Wellen points to his patient's open abdominal cavity and her newly transplanted pancreas.
Here's the vein where the blood flows out that we made a connection. You see the sutures right there?
Oh, wow.
A light blue surgical sheet covers the rest of the patient's body and blocks the surgeon's view of her face. Her name is Tiffany Buchta. She has type 1 diabetes.
I was diagnosed when I was 15.
Formerly known as juvenile diabetes, the type 1 form develops when the body's immune system turns on itself, destroying the insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. The exact cause of type 1 diabetes isn't known, but researchers believe a combination of genetics and environmental factors are to blame. As a teenager, Tiffany was an athlete, playing basketball for her high school. But after her diagnosis, life got a lot more complicated.
Having a more strict schedule on when you eat and taking your medicine and weighing out your foods and things like that. So it was, you know, it was kind of difficult at the beginning, but you just get used to it.
Unlike type 2 diabetics, who can often control their disease with diet, exercise, and oral medication, people with type 1 diabetes need daily insulin injections to survive. Diabetes can be particularly tough on the kidneys.
Probably about 4 years ago, I found out that my kidneys were like 45% functioning and didn't realize that it could happen so quick.
That was when she was in her early 30s. By October of last year, Tiffany's kidneys had pretty much stopped working. 3 times a week, she had to go to a local clinic, There, she spent 3.5 hours hooked up to a dialysis machine. It filtered the waste products out of her blood, doing the job her kidneys no longer could. Then Tiffany was offered the possibility of a transplant, not just a new kidney, but a pancreas, too. Again, Dr. Wellen.
If I was to just give a type 1 diabetic a kidney transplant, over time their diabetes is going to attack that kidney, just like it did their own kidneys. So when you offer them a kidney and a pancreas transplant from the same donor, not only do you drastically improve their quality of life, so their sugar's completely normal, no longer need for insulin, but it makes that kidney last longer.
Tiffany's transplanted pancreas and kidney are attached to blood vessels in her lower abdomen, leaving her own pancreas and kidneys in place. Her original pancreas still produces digestive enzymes, while her new pancreas makes the insulin she needs. Her newly transplanted kidney will filter her blood and produce urine. With careful control of their blood glucose, cholesterol, and blood pressure, many type 1 diabetics can avoid serious complications. But for those who do develop renal failure, Wellen says a kidney pancreas transplant can be life-saving.
If she did not get this transplant, Tiffany would have a 30% chance of living 5 years.
With the pancreas and kidney of her donor, a 23-year-old car crash victim, Tiffany is likely to live longer.
This operation should give her a 5-year survival, hopefully in the 85% range. So you're going from 30% chance of living 5 years to 85% chance. I mean, that's a big difference.
Instead of insulin, Tiffany will now need to take medications that suppress her immune system to keep her body from rejecting her new organs. The drugs will also make her more vulnerable to infections and disease. But to Tiffany, who is just happy to be off dialysis, it's all worth it.
I mean, I have so much more energy. And even with, you know, starting back to work, I was kind of scared on how much that would wear me out, but it really hasn't. It's just nice to have my life back.
I'm Veronique LaCapra.
It's 12:44. Before there was fast food, fast fashion, and fast talking, there was a time when we set the table, cared for our appearance, and admired elegance. A handful of books out this year explores the notion of bringing back some of those lost arts. NPR's Linda Wertheimer talked about some of those books and the emerging trend with Sally Singer, the editor of Tea, the New York Times style magazine.
Let's just begin with the books. We've got three of them that we'd like to take a little peek into. One is called Let's Bring Back by Leslie Bloom. Another is The Encyclopedia of the Exquisite by Jessica Kerwin Jenkins. And the third is Home Economics by Jennifer McKnight Trance. Sally, could you just give us a quick thumbnail sketch of each of them?
Absolutely. Let's Bring Back is a compendium of all sorts of things Leslie Bloom finds delightful and retro. And retro for Leslie can be ancient or it can be the 1980s, because Leslie is a youngish blogger based in New York and someone who is trying to live a sort of elegant and careful life in a really fast city. So she'll muse on everything from a red caboose at the end of a train to all of her favorite candies and sweets from years past. Jessica's book is a much more historical book about all the things that make the world kind of magical and exquisite and complicated in certain ways. Everything from the color black to a Joseph Cornell ballet that was actually never staged. And the book on home economics, which is by Jennifer Trance, is an old-fashioned home economics book about how to care for your house and care for your children and how to live a kind of proper and resourceful life at a time in which people are sort of doing everything on the fly and with less care. And ordering out. I mean, it's a very proper update of a classic home economics text.
Now, there's obviously a theme of nostalgia in these books, a longing for laundry chutes, praise of red lipstick. What makes us look backward in this way? Why do these writers think we want to?
I think what they're looking for, it's not nostalgia per se. It's the idea of the charm of the world that's charming and nuanced and thought over, to sort of find what makes things magical and what makes things resourceful and luxurious. All of these books talk about being resourceful and that luxury doesn't involve money. That's very, very important to all of them. And you can see they're all written for this climate now, the sort of post-economic downturn.
Now, the book on home economics, the writer laments the actual skills of running a household that have been lost. I mean, you have to keep in mind that back in the day, we used to actually study home economics. Here's a bit of tape from an educational film that was produced in Iowa in the 50s.
What is home economics? Is it the technical knowledge of the equipment in a home? Or the understanding of how to create beautiful clothes and more attractive homes? Is it the skill to prepare an attractive, nourishing meal? Or the ability to teach others these many things?
So what do you think of that? I got to say that I don't think that the idea of practicing home ec is entirely lost. I mean, Martha Stewart has created an empire on that.
But in such a different way. I mean, the Martha Stewart approach to home economics, it's more of a hobbyist pursuit. What these women are thinking of, it's not about a scrapbook room. These are modern girls. They live in little apartments in New York City. It's not about, you know, the perfection of your Christmas tree and your Christmas ornaments. It's about knowing how to sew a patch on a garment or knowing how to darn a sock or what the difference between broiling and steaming is.
Well, I had a question about that. I was startled to note that Ms. Trance suggests broiling a steak for 8 minutes on a side. The result would be a hockey puck, in my opinion.
I would say that might be the case. She also thinks that one of the great dangers in a kitchen is eggs piled too high in a bowl. That's in the cautions for the kitchen section, which I found very funny.
Sally Singer, some of the things in these books, you mentioned darning socks. I'm never going to darn a sock, The Longest Day I Live. Mm-hmm. Good Humor apparently had frog-shaped popsicles. There's some things that, you know, I don't want to bring them back.
Well, I think that's the fun of the book, these books. You're sort of shocked and horrified by some things and dazzled and delighted by others. I don't know. I think there's a section in Jessica's book where in describing the color black, she somehow goes from Victorian mourning to the look of the women in the Black Panther movement within about a paragraph. And you just think, bless her. She's just free associating across the board. And it's fun.
Leslie Bloom had in her book a couple of things that I really loved. One was Bring Back Radio Drama. I'm for that. And another was a recipe for Girl Scout cookies.
I mean, that is the most brilliant thing because, of course, none of us would ever make a Girl Scout cookie. The whole point about a Girl Scout cookie is it arrives on your doorstep in a box with a Girl Scout. What I really love about her book is the way it's written, that she'll say about, again, a red caboose on a train, like an exclamation point at the end of a long Jamesian sentence. I mean, incredibly pretentious and deeply wonderful all at once.
But basically, these books are all little tastes, lists of things that you could have on your bedside table, and, you know, even if you fell asleep in 5 minutes, you could read a couple of pages.
But that's the ultimate luxury, that you could read a couple pages and learn just one thing and go to bed and dream about it. And it would be something worth dreaming about. I don't know, in Leslie's case, it would be about the beauty of a one-piece swimsuit. I think she says something like, bikinis are grand, but it's hard to live up to their expectations. And I think in the case